Chromosomes. Little strands of nucleic acids and proteins are the fundamental genetic instructions that tell us who we are at birth. Most people are born with 46 chromosomes, but each year in the United States, about 6,000 people are born with an extra chromosome, making them a person with Down syndrome. If you've ever encountered someone with Down syndrome, you know that they are some of the kindest, most joyful people you will ever meet. They truly have something extra. My name is Lisa Nichols, and I have spent the last 24 years as both the CEO of Technology Partners and as the mother to Allie. Allie has something extra in every sense of the word. I have been blessed to be by her side as she impacts everyone she meets. Through these two important roles as CEO and mother to Allie, I have witnessed countless life lessons that have fundamentally changed the way I look at the world. While you may not have an extra chromosome, every leader has something extra that defines who you are. Join me as I explore the something extra in leaders from all walks of life and discover how that difference in each of them has made a difference in their companies, their families, their communities, and in themselves. Today, I am thrilled to welcome Atul Tandon to the show. Atul is the CEO of Opportunity International, a member of Forbes Nonprofit Council, is the founder of the Tandon Institute, and was an executive at Citibank. Atul, welcome. I'm so excited that this worked out and that you could be with us today. So tell us a little bit, Atul. I know a little bit of your story, but I'm so excited for the listeners to hear your story. So tell us a little bit about your upbringing, if you would, and where were you born? And just tell us a little bit about what brought you here.
Thanks, Lisa. Thanks for having me. This is so exciting for me to be here with you. And frankly, in your company and that of people who, through their life's work, have demonstrated that something extra. So it's so excited that, and frankly, humbled that you would count me in that group. Of course, I'm here in America today and running an international nonprofit, Opportunity International, and we'll talk about that. But life didn't start like that. I was born in India. I was born in Delhi and in a two-room tenement on the floor. and the little community that at that time my parents lived. I'll give you the Hindi name, Daryaganj. What it means is the town by the river.
And it's town right by on the river.
Right on the banks of the river, Yamuna, one of the big rivers in India. And so that was life. I grew up in India, and we didn't have much, but what we had a lot of was love. In that process of being loved by my parents, by my family, by those around us who chose to invest a lot in my brother and I, we grew up and got a great education and got on with life. And, I look back at that life, and sometimes when I sit down with my mom, and she's now 81, she reflects back, sometimes with tears in her eyes, and she says, there were days that I didn't know that you would survive. And today, my brother went on to work for the World Bank, just retired a few years back, and I'm here serving the poor around the world. And I have to say that the person who did that something extra in my life was and is my mom.
Oh, that's so amazing. Now, were they, you've told me a little bit about the story. Were they educated, your mom and dad?
Yes. They were educated, and both of them, but they felt very, very strongly that their kids need to be better educated. And, you know, they were so committed and dedicated, Lisa, to that my mom chose to leave her kids in the big city in Delhi when my father's job took him to a very distant small town in a remote part of the country, mm-hmm. more than about 1,500 miles away.
Oh, my.
So I used to meet my parents just a couple of times a year. And she did that, and she told me she did that sacrifice for one reason, that I could get educated and get a better life mm-hmm. than what she had had.
So what does she think today, Atul, when you, I mean, your mom is probably just so proud of you and your brother, isn't she?
She has tears of joy. So after all these years, and I know there were many tears. I was the older of the two boys and saw some of that. Today she has tears of joy. And I'm so grateful, you know, she's now with us. Lives with my brother, who he and his wife look after her very, very well. But today she can look back at life and be grateful. And I can only look at that and, you know, and I know it's not only her, it's the mothers and fathers around the world. And Lisa, in my work today, that's what I get to see.
Right.
I get to see parents who, they all desire the same thing. They all desire for their children to have a better life than what they had. And for most of them, the people that I meet and the people that opportunity serves, life is not good. Life is hard. But to see that spirit of love, of giving, of investing, of caring, of putting in their kids that passion to do well, to excel in life, I see that in every parent I meet.
That is definitely a common denominator, isn't it? And it really doesn't matter where those people, what station in life they're at. The common denominator is they want the best life for their children.
Yeah.
And they will sacrifice, they will do whatever they need to do. So that kind of brings us a little bit to opportunity and the exciting work that you're doing now. So talk to us a little bit about opportunity, because some of our listeners may not know about opportunity. If you would, go back, way back in the origins of opportunity and talk to us, give us that story, Atul. It is so inspirational about how opportunity started and then how it's different today.
Thanks, Lisa. And I don't get tired of telling the story. It just is so riveting for me personally, and I hope it'll be for your listeners. Is we are Opportunity International. We are now a 47-year-old global microfinance network. What we do is very simply two things. We help the poor come alongside them and help them earn a better income so that they can escape poverty. And we do that by giving them, you know, resources, financial resources, training and support. And then, like I said earlier, we then seek to educate their children. So we fund schools in their local neighborhoods, low-income schools, so the kids can get a better education and never have to be in poverty, get the opportunity to do better. Well, it didn't start like that. Well, in some ways it did, in some ways it didn't. We were founded in 1971 by actually a guy from the Midwest, Al Whitaker. He was the president of Bristol Myers Squibb, living in Chicago. And Al and his wife are visiting in Latin America, Colombia to be specific. And they just realized, they said, well, the way to help these people, and this only came, I believe, because Al was a businessman. He was an entrepreneur.
Right.
So what he knew in life was how to be an entrepreneur. And he saw these people who were, you know, literally at that time, remember, this is 1971,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, to get to Colombia is not an easy task, first of all. Well, you go there aren't roads, there aren't cars, there's no electricity, right? Running water is scarce. I mean, this is the state of the world at that time. And well, the way for these guys to do better is to do what we do, is to start a business, to stand on their own feet. And they need the same three things that we do. We need financial resources. We need training. Somebody needs to come alongside us and help us to show us how to do this. And then we need ongoing support. We need the brotherhood and the sisterhood, the friendship and the fellowship of those around us to continue to drive us forward. Well, that's what we're going to give to these people. We're not going to give them a handout. We're not going to give them a penny. We're going to give them a hand up. We're going to get them to stand on their feet. Well, so what happens? They get together with the local church that they were visiting. That local church, then somebody at the church, Ralph, his name is, and Ralph reaches out and says, hey, let me take you to a friend of mine who's selling spices on the street, right? Well, so they go and meet this spice seller. His name happens to be Carlos Moreno, right? So they meet this spice seller, and he's selling two different kinds of spices sitting on the street, just like everybody else. And so what they decide to do is they ask Carlos, well, what do you think you need to do better in life? You're selling these spices. You've been doing it day in, day out. Probably his father used to do it before him. He says, Carlos is not, he's a smart man. He knows exactly what he needs.
Right.
And I think that's actually one of the lessons we have to learn and keep learning over and over again. The people that we are serving, it takes smarts to survive poverty. You and I would have a very hard time
living
on $2, $3 a day. These people do. They know what they need to do better. Well, he says, well, what I need to do better, I need to buy a spice grinder. Because then I can buy raw spices and I can grind them and then I'll sell processed spices. That'll earn me more money. I don't have money to buy the grinder. Every day I buy spices, I sell spices, a little bit left over. So, you know, Al Whitaker gives this guy a loan. $68 loan.
$68.
$68 loan to buy a spice grinder. Long story short, 2 years later, Carlos has got 11 employees and two stores selling spices, 54 different kinds, right? 10 years later, Lisa, I got to say, Carlos does, I think, what must have been the first Colombian IPO. He now has something like 11 stores. You know, he's selling spices all over, but his heart is with the poor. So he sells his business. He says, no, I've done enough. I'm on my feet now. I need to go back and help the people that I came from. So he goes and becomes a business consultant to the community that he was from and helps them to get on their own feet to repeat his success. And that's what he did. And then he founded a local church. That's what he did. He spent his whole life helping the poor stand on their own feet. Just died a few years back of cancer. I wish I had met him before he passed away. But for us, that story that started with Carlos, 47 years later, now we have about 10 million clients around the world in 23 countries. That story is what gets repeated every day in all parts of the world. Does it always succeed and come out on the top like Carlos? No. But do we always improve, go from 1 to 2 to 3 to 4? Absolutely, yes. Mm-hmm. And
for us, there's so many lessons there. Aren't there?
So many lessons,
you know, from the thing that you had said about Al asking him, what do you need to take your business to the next level? He knew. And then coming back to his own community to help others do the same thing. There's so many different lessons there. So from there, Al decided, right, to form Opportunity. Yes. The light bulb went on and he said, if we can help these people have these resources, whether it be skilling them up or financial resources. Until you said the spice grinder was $68, but the average loan that Opportunity is handing out is not $10 million.
Oh, no. It's the average loan now that we would hand out when we start off is about $175. About 98%, if you'll believe it, of our clients today, 10 million clients, are women. And Lisa, the most remarkable fact in this, okay, they get $125 loan. They are principally women who are running small family businesses from their homes, right, or in the street marketplace, whether they're selling vegetables, whether they are selling savories and whether it's fried pakoras or samosas and so on, or they're selling flowers or they have a creche at home, they're small. The remarkable thing is the repayment rate,
mm-hmm.
right? And you think about, all right, these are poor women living on $2, $3, $4 a day. They get a loan, well, they won't pay back. They'll be poor credit risks. Guess what? The repayment rate is not 80%. It's not 85%. It's not even 95%. It's 99%.
That is so remarkable. And I think that is one of the things that just gripped my heart so much when I started learning about Opportunity International. Talk to the audience a little bit, Atul, about the trust groups, because I feel like that's the game changer. I really do.
The reason that the rate is 99% is that what we do is we ask the women not to run their businesses alone. Life is hard, and it's hard for all of us, especially if you are an entrepreneur and you're standing on your own 2 feet. You know, you can start to learn the hard lessons pretty fast. So what we do in these village communities and in the small towns that we work in is to ask the women to form small groups, the trust groups, where they actually walk with each other, support each other, and in fact end up doing mutual assurance of the loans for each other so that they're there in the ups of life, they're there in the downs of life. And I was at a trust group, happened to be in Bogota, the capital of Colombia, and there was this group of women who had got together, and I think it was called the Sisters of Angels group. I mean, it had a very memorable name.
Yes.
And they were getting together for the group meeting, and they had the youngest were twin sisters who were about 26 years old. The oldest was a grandma who would have been about 72 or 72 years old. And so they were each telling their stories of what had happened the previous day, previous week. One of them had her husband had an accident, had to go to the hospital. She had not been able to run her own business. So sure enough, it was one of the younger women who stepped forward and said, well, if you got to attend to your husband in the hospital, why don't I stand at your stall? You know, and mm-hmm. that's the spirit of trust, the spirit of support that gets them going. The other thing that I saw actually in that group, which touched my heart, was that older woman, the grandma, intentionally sat next to the two youngest women.
Oh, I love that.
And the reason I figured out, I know a little bit of Spanish, was that one of them was going to be getting married soon. the grandma was instructing that young girl on what married life was like during this trust group piece. And just to watch that sweet interaction, which is we as opportunity never intended for that life right. lesson to be passed. But it was happening in that sense. And I think to me, that's the essence of the trust group, the support group. We're supporting each other through life. All of us have lessons learned. Here, there was an opportunity for this older lady to now coach the younger lady.
Speak into, right. That's and, wonderful.
And the younger lady had the opportunity to step forward and help another woman. So, and I personally think that's how life is planned and intended to be lived. Is when
community.
We live in community with
in
each
community.
Other.
Yes, we were not meant to do life alone, that's for sure. So let's take a quick break and then we'll be back with the tool. Story of Carlos. I love it. But you know what's so amazing? Are there so many? We would be here all day, wouldn't we?
Yeah,
probably we all week if Atul, you know, expounded on all the stories. There's so many awesome stories. And the thing that I love too about opportunity, it is not just helping that person's immediate family, but whole villages have been transformed.
That's right.
Through opportunity, because when these entrepreneurs get their businesses up and off the ground, what do they need? They need more workers, right? And they're able to employ more people. So I love that. So tell us a little bit. You came out of for-profit, private industry, Citibank. Your brother worked for the World Bank. Now you've jumped over to the not-for-profit world. So talk to us a little bit about the differences mm-hmm. and, you know, also the similarities, I guess, between those two worlds.
You know, if you were to ask me a different question, which is the hardest job that I've ever done in my life, this is it. So, and by the way, I was running Citibank's worldwide brand systems, you know,
that's
about 20 years
job.
Back. That was my day job 20 years back. And I think the reason is this, is that in my for-profit world, it's not that that job is easy. It is hard. You have to win the hearts, the spirits of people to follow you and to follow the lead and to do what they are being called to do. But I liken it to more of, you are an army commander. Once you've made a strategic decision, now you can direct people. In my present job, there is nothing like an army commander. Yeah. So, Lisa, if I was to give command to the supposed army that I'm leading today, they would all yawn. And, so now I have had one of the principal differences really is you learn how to lead through influence. Right, you learn how to lead through the power of inspiration.
Mm-hmm.
You learn how to lead through the coming to an understanding that really people are number one. And that for me, my job is to invest in people, both my people here, my staff, and equally to get us all charged up to invest in people across the world, the mm-hmm. poor that who we serve. So that's one of the biggest differences. How do I lead not through directive power of authority of my office, but do I lead through the power of the shared mission and the shared call that we have? And then how do we work through, one, discerning people who feel similarly called, who are they? And then when they come on board, to now bring them together into teams that, to most degrees, are self-directed. So mm-hmm. that's the good part, is once
right.
you get the missionally focused, highly charged up people going, they're self-directed. They will take action. They will make changes. They will do the corrections necessary. They are not looking to you for day-to-day leadership. And that's where I think I liken it to, I like to ride bikes. Not motorbikes, but bicycles.
Right.
And when you're riding bicycles, you learn very quickly is that, okay, you can't really sit on the seat. You got to ride a little bit above the seat. So that's what my life is like. I have to ride a little
analogy.
Bit above the seat.
That's a great analogy.
Yeah. So that would be some of the differences, I would say, between the two. But they're very similar as well. You still have to have clear purpose.
The selection process is important, right? You know, those things are similar,
they're
right?
They're very similar. It seems very similar. You got to have, what are my clear expected outcomes? You know, what's the focus of my actions? What's my action plan? And now, high quality execution. And then, you know, how do I monitor and evaluate if I'm doing the right thing? So none of those things change, but the chemistry of who comes on board, how do they come on board, how do you bring them together, charge them, that changes a bit. Mm-hmm. But I think both are needed in their respective spheres. I do believe both are needed. You know, nonprofits are usually very, very good, Lisa, at coming up with innovative solutions. Opportunities on History, my organization, really is a history of innovation. You know, mm-hmm. starting from everything from the first loan to Carlos to forming the trust groups, which, by the way, is a separate story some other time I'll tell you. Susie Cheston sitting with the gorillas in El Salvador. It's a very different story, riveting story. and then, you know, later on, we entered Africa to decide, hey, that's where literally the last frontiers are. There are no roads. What do you do there? No banks, no financial services. Since deciding, all right, if these people don't have banks, we're going to send banks to them. So put ATMs on backs of trucks and send them off, which led to eventually to mobile banking. You know, led along the way, we have insurance. They don't have insurance. So let's set up microinsurance. And that's the story. I'll pause on microinsurance because that's also a lesson learned between the nonprofit and for-profit sectors, Lisa, to bring you back. We started microinsurance at a desk in our office and then started up, figured out how to make it run, took the idea to the Gates Foundation. Say, hey, we got a big idea. What do you think we should do? We got this is our sort of plan and budget. To their credit, the Gates Foundation looked at our plan and said, you guys are not thinking big enough. What could you do if we gave you 5 times the money that you asked for?
Wow.
So we did. We went back and came back with a plan that was 5 times bigger. Well, long story short, launched microinsurance in Africa, got it to a point where we had about 6 million policies, at which point as a nonprofit we realized, well, we're a nonprofit. We are not an insurance company. This is not big enough for an insurance company. So which is where the for-profit world is very good at scaling. Guess what happens? We sold Microinsure to AXA, to a French insurance company, one of the largest on the planet. They took a 6 million portfolio. Within, I believe, in 3 years, they had got it up to 66 million. Now they have more than 100 million policies. They are adding 1.5 million a month. We could never have achieved
that. Could never have done that.
But
right.
I look at it and they say, hallelujah. I mean, come on, think of the number of people whose lives are better when the nonprofit world and the for-profit world work
come
with
together.
Each other.
That's wonderful. What a great story. Do you have some other nonprofits that are what you would consider your favorites outside of Opportunity? One thing that I do want to say, if our listeners wanted to know more about Opportunity, can you give them the URL, a tool, so that they can go there and look it up themselves?
Yeah, please do. Opportunity.org is our URL. So please do. We are on Facebook. We are on Twitter. But of course, our website is the easiest one to get to. And you'll get to, you can read about the story of Carlos, see what we are doing. And we hope you will get excited enough to join us. Now, your question about other nonprofits, you know, for me, there are nonprofits do hard work and very good work and much needed work because I do believe, you know, there are places where, Lisa, for individuals like you and I who believe and feel that part of our life's work is to help people who are being left behind in our own communities and around the world and to look at endemic issues that are in every community around the world. How do you solve them? Whether mm-hmm. from homelessness to climate change to, you know, it could be the environment. It was civil liberties in America a few years back. Oh, that's the place that they come together. And I believe that for me, the reason nonprofits are important is because that's what it do. If nonprofits really do exist at the heart of it because we care for the common good. You and I, your listeners, care for the common good. You know, Plato asked the question of summum bonum, who cares for the common good? answers. We care for the common good, and we care it through the nonprofits. As I look at in our world today, where we are as we sit here, I really, one, my hat's off to the Red Cross. Many, many years of very hard work, caring for, and, we are just going through the Hurricane Florence. Guess who's on the front lines?
Yes, they are.
It's the Red Cross. There is Katrina happens. Who's on the front lines? It's Red Cross. The Haiti earthquake happens. Who's on the front lines? It's the Red Cross. Do they get it always right? No, but none of us always get it right. But are they committed to responding? Absolutely, they're there. I have good things to say about them. Habitat for Humanity, founded on a similar principle to ours. Well, don't just give people a handout, give them a hand, a handout. We help people start businesses and earn incomes. The Habitat for Humanity helps people fund their homes.
Right.
It's not right for people to live in huts. It's not right for people to live in temporary shelters. It's actually right to have a sense of place of your own home that you own that nobody can then get you out of, which is what they have done for now decades.
Mm-hmm.
The third one I would happens to be my ex-employer. I should declare that right up front is World Vision. Now almost 60 plus years. They have done just one thing and one thing alone. They have gone and helped the poorest families and specifically their children to live better lives and around the world and in the hardest places in the world. So as we now sit here and look at where World Vision's going, I can tell you they are now saying, hey, our job is to go to the fragile economies, the fragile states, where actually the state itself is breaking mm-hmm. down in Somalia, in Syria, in places like that, and help people there to lead better lives. And I think, again, very hard work, very heartbreaking work. But I'm grateful that these organizations are there, have been there, are there, and are committed to being there
committed
in the future.
Committed to being there for the future,
now,
right.
The only way they will be there in the future is if you and I, your listeners, stand with them.
Absolutely. Well, you just named some of my favorites as well. So American Red Cross, we love, I'll give a shout out to my dear friend, Cindy Erickson, who's the regional CEO for American Red Cross here. And I just see all the time from her, deploying a team here, deploying a team there. They're doing wonderful work. And then Habitat, we've done that as a company before. I always love team building with a purpose is what I call it.
Yeah.
And it was fun, building this house as a team. Mm-hmm. And, there's a lot of benefit there for doing that as a team and just cross-functionally. So you certainly hit on some of my favorites. And you might remember this, Atul, but I remember there was a famous quote, the founder of World Vision, and I don't remember, I don't remember the person, you probably do, but his prayer was, God, break my heart with the things that break your heart.
That's right.
Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. They've stayed true to that,
Amen to that.
And so, very good. Well, let's talk about, this is called Something Extra. And so, let's talk a little bit about the Something Extra, maybe a tool that you've seen in a team member, either past or present.
I'll actually pick a client of ours, if you don't mind. Yeah, I met, this is a lady, Linda the Baker. Yeah, in a small little suburb just outside Accra. I met her last year and then actually ended up meeting her again now twice over the year. And so Linda bakes bread. And she started actually not being a baker. She used to buy bread from a baker and then go and sell it in the marketplace, 3 loaves, 6 loaves, 12 loaves at a time. And then got a loan from Opportunity, met the Opportunity loan officer, got a loan, bought a baking oven, started, this was about 3 or 4 years back. Well, you fast forward, and this is not a very long time. It's about, 4 years on. She now has a factory. She employs, I believe, at last count, 47 people, whom she houses, by the way, houses and feeds all of her employees. And she's no longer baking 12 loaves a day. She's baking 6,000 loaves a day.
6,000 loaves. And where is Linda? Where is she located?
In Accra, Ghana.
Okay, in
Accra,
Ghana.
Yeah,
okay.
Accra, Ghana.
So will she ship to St. Louis, Missouri?
Yeah,
because I like bread.
Well, I will definitely put you in touch with Linda. The last time I met her, she wanted to set up a new factory. So it's that something extra that, I saw in Linda that frankly stood out in me. It's she has a passion for life. She had this vision of, was not satisfied simply selling 12 loaves a day. She wanted to do more. She had that drive. But then she had the courage to ask for a loan, taught herself the skills to run a business. Right, organization skills, was not afraid, even today, not afraid of asking for, I don't know how to do this, help me. She wanted me to sit down and help her to figure out how to finance her next building, right there in the middle of my, you know, visit. So it's that drive to learn and not to give up. I would say, in addition, a spirit of generosity and caring. The people who work in her little factory, every one of them are people whom she's met who are living on less than $2 a day. Extremely poor. And she made a commitment that every one of her employees would be people who are not even able to earn enough to survive for the day. She now houses them. There's a dormitory, feeds them, and they work, then they get paid. And that's the thing she's most proud of. Wasn't simply the 6,000 loaves, but now she's got, you know, in addition to that, there are about 80 women who come to her factory. They pick up the bread and then go and sell it in the marketplace themselves. So that's what she's proud of, is that spirit of giving, of that generosity. Wonderful. And I think the biggest for me is her laugh and her celebration of life. When you meet her, that is my most memorable. She came running, gave me a big hug, kissed me on both cheeks, and welcomed me to her factory. So I'll never forget Linda.
That's
something extra.
Great story. I love that. So Atul, tell me, what do you think is the something extra that every leader needs?
I think what I would say to you is three things every leader needs. And this is, you know, I've now been working. This is my 37th year of work. I've worked in for-profit, non-profit. I've led work teams, I think at last count, in 82 countries around the world. I think one is to look through life, what we have, what you and I have, the positions we have, our families we have, our status in our communities, through a lens of gratitude. We didn't earn this. These are gifts to us. The second is a life that is full of hope. Because when we have hope in ourselves, in our world around us, and we communicate that hope to the others around us, you know, that's when the rising tide lifts all boats. Mm-hmm. That is what I call
spirit
godly optimism.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have a tremendous spirit of hope. And frankly, there is no reason not to. Because as we live today in this world, the world is doing today far better than it did 10 years back, 20 years back, right? I was born in 1959. Somewhere between 70 to 80% of my country in India lived on less than a dollar a day. Now, that number is now down to less than 20%. And I'll come back to that. So we have, from 1990 to now, we have reduced the number of people living in extreme poverty from over about 2 billion to less than now 700 million people. Tremendous hope. So look past the headlines and have a sense of hope and purpose about not only the world, but about you and your team. The third, and I think to me the most important really, is to see the potential in people. There is so much more in a person than even that person ever realizes. And I do believe that the leader's most primary role in a community, in an organization, in our families, is actually to get people to accomplish more than they ever thought they could.
Right. You see something in them that sometimes they don't see themselves.
They don't see, and let them rise to not just what they believe their potential is, but much higher up. Because in every human being, there is not simply a reservoir, but tremendous power to do good, to do better. And how do we help unleash that? Well, start with the lens of gratitude for yourself. Have a tremendous amount of a sense of hope and a spirit of hope about who you are, your people around you. And thirdly, believe in your people and let them know that you believe in them, and then that there is so much more to them than you see or I see or they themselves see.
That is wonderful. Thank you so much for that. So tell us, is there anything exciting that is coming up for you or for Opportunity International that you want to let our listeners know about?
Well, I'll close with this, Lisa. I do believe, for me, the most exciting news on the planet, not only for me or for Opportunity or for any one of us, for all of us, is that we are, you and I, first time in human history, are able to see the end of extreme poverty. You know, if you look at the World Bank numbers, extreme poverty, people living on less than $2 a day. Now, all that by the way, in layman's terms, if you strip aside all of the jargon, means is that the person can earn enough money to buy a full meal a day. That's all that it means, that you have enough money to buy a full meal so you can survive to the next day. It actually doesn't mean that you have a shirt on your back or a roof over your head. So 1990, not too far back, there's more than 2 billion people living on extreme poverty around the planet. 2016, that number is now down to 700 million odd. Frankly, if I was to go back to about 1875, I'll go back to that number because it tells you how much progress we have made in the last about 175 years. More than 80% of every living human being on the planet was living on less than what we would now call a dollar a day. Today, that number, even though in 1875, best estimates, there might have been about somewhere between 500 to 700 million people living on the planet. Now we have about more than 7 billion people. Now that number is down to less than 10%, about 9%, 700 million people. The best news that you and I have, and I wish every newspaper printed this every morning, we can see that number down to zero by 2030. And so that's for
lifetime.
Me, that is our challenge, our call, our accomplishment in our generation can see this, and it's not simply a curse but a blemish, and it's been there with human beings forever. And so for me, that's the most exciting thing, and that's what we're committing opportunity to. We can't do this by ourselves. We are one of many, but we want to do all we can to help the very poor start to earn a living, go from earning $2 a day to $3 a day to $4 a day to $5. We're not going to make everybody a millionaire, but by golly, we're going to get everybody to a point where they can sleep on a full stomach, they know where the next meal's going to come from, their children are going to school, and they are sleeping on a bed and have a roof on their head. Mm-hmm. And a shirt on their back. That we can do. And that's what I'm committed to seeing our organization do. And I pray and I wish and I hope in this interview, that's the excitement that we walk away with. We can do this together.
We can. It's together, though, is the operative word, isn't it? Because we can all be a part of that. We can
Amen.
All be a part of that.
We all going to cross that finish line together.
That's right.
And I want to be at that party with you, Lisa.
As I with you. Atul, this has been such a pleasure spending some time with you, and thank you so much for being with us here today.
Thank you for having me.
Our show today is executive produced by Brian Muncy. Our technical producer is Daniel Williams. Something Extra with Lisa Nichols is a Technology Partners production. Copyright Technology Partners, Inc., 2018. For show notes or to reach out to Lisa, visit lisagailnichols.com/somethingextra. Don't forget to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen.